All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We are live at Spats. This is the Saturday early morning after the late night party last night. It was a lot of fun. Highly recommend coming down to Spats. So we're at Spats 2016. I am Jeremy Jackson. I'm sitting here with Brian Boyles-White, the an athletic trainer. Where is it?
Sure, I'm at the University of Michigan.
Michigan, okay. I thought it was Michigan, but I don't want to. I know how some people up there get really offensive if you say the wrong one. So, all right, so University of Michigan, and he was talking about injury prevention through conditioning. And now I talked with Mike McKinney and Dan Boothby. You know those guys, Northeastern University in Boston.
By name, yes, only.
All right, and so it was kind of similar as how strength training is healthcare too. And that's kind of what you were saying here. You know, taking care of these training them properly will reduce the injuries. And so in just looking at training differently. So one of the first questions I wanted to ask is, as an athletic trainer in the secondary setting, that's me, I'm not really involved with the training and conditioning of the athletes. Like that's what the coaches do. That's what they get paid for. And honestly, when we have five different practices going on, it's just not something I can do. So how do you see this playing out for me?
Sure. So, a job before, I used to work at the National Center for Sports Safety, and my job was a lot of, I did a lot of education to coaches. And one of our big talkabouts, you know, my presentations that we do is, you know, managing and taking care of youth sports safety and minimizing injuries. You know, one of the big things that we talked about in the presentation was, you know, getting out to the coaches and talking to them. So maybe it's a preseason talk, you know, with the coaches and bringing them in and, you know, some sort of in-service day. Maybe they do their first aid and maybe talk about some of these, you know, these different training components, the qualities, the Burdenko method qualities, and maybe how do you incorporate those things. And just like we did today, maybe you break them out in a group and, you know, maybe how can we maybe change from running, you know, a 40-yard dash to maybe incorporate some of the qualities of balance, coordination, flexibility, and incorporate that with our speed, strength, and endurance to maybe help minimize and reduce injuries.
Okay, so let's go with that. Football, 40-yard dash. What would you do to incorporate the balance? You know, I'm thinking if we're running a 40-yard dash, like you said, linemen aren't going to really ever run 40 yards.
Absolutely correct.
Right, and the receivers are going to run 40 yards over and over and over again, and we're going to want maximum effort, but we're also going to want them to be able to cut, to be able to block, to be able to stop. And so let's focus on, say, a receiver, because that's a realistic 40-yard dash.
Okay.
All right, so how are we going to train some of those things?
You know, so maybe, you know, during their motion, maybe obviously, so we're going to use 40 yards. Maybe we're going to have some sort of change of directions during that 40 yards, but ultimately they're still running 40 yards. So maybe at the 10-yard mark, maybe they're in a lateral step one way and continue. So now all of a sudden, obviously in a balance method, we'd have to do both right and left side, right? And obviously the balance method being also backwards as well. You know, so maybe they're running from the 40-yard line back to the end zone where you're starting at zero. And maybe they get that same spot, they have to stop, plant, you know, maybe lateral step, maybe double leg step to the right, single leg step to the right, and finish going backwards as well. You know, so maybe also incorporate different speeds of that. Maybe they're going to do three reps at, you know, 100% effort, three reps at 50% effort. Maybe we add other components of speed. Maybe we do some arm motion. Maybe they do a double arm pump, you know, at the start, at the beginning, or in the middle of that motion of 40 yards to incorporate overall, you know, the overall training of the body.
All right, so I'm not sure. I'm not a coach, but running 10 yards, taking a lateral step, and then sprinting forward, it doesn't seem like something that's realistic in the game. And so that's kind of also what you were saying is, you know, they do this deadlift, but they don't ever, you know, they do use terrible form, but they don't ever do that in the game. We do box jumps, but they don't ever do that in the game. So how do I balance, yes, this is what they're going to do in the game, with I want them to be stronger, or I want to train that.
So maybe we have to look at their movement patterns during a practice or during a game and mimic those during our workouts. So, you know, as we know, you know, offensive linemen, you know, they get up from their position and they have to come up and get in a position there after your pop. You know, pop their arms out and push back that defender that's coming, right? So maybe put some bands behind their back, and so as they're going out, obviously they get in one way, or maybe they come out here and the bands are on the reverse and they're actually having to pull back, right? Maybe we add a component where they have to maybe, you know, pop up and jump 90 degrees, turn, pop, go back, take that step backwards.
All right, so one of the things that we were talking about, you broke us into little groups, like you said, and Bubba was talking about linemen having to take a step back. And I was just thinking it would be, seem like it would be a good idea, but then it seems like it would be more likely to cause injury, because I've seen these things. It's like the perfect push-up where it, like, rotates. So it's like a plate. So if they had their foot on that and they were having to rotate and be able to maintain their balance. But it seems like if I had a 300-pound lineman with his one foot on an unstable surface while he's trying to rotate to maintain balance, it seems like it would like a hoverboard almost. So, like, it's going to cause injury.
So remember, you know, with the Berdenko method, we're always moving from simple to complicated. So maybe it's a case of having to back them down. Maybe they're doing that in a horizontal position first and working on maybe getting their hips over on the ground. You know, as they're doing better, maybe we put them to a sitting position, then, you know, a semi-sitting position, maybe actually standing, and then actually a moving position. Again, a lot of our movement patterns we do nowadays are very, you know, complex maneuvers, you know, but if you back them down to some of the basics of horizontal, you know, or maybe they're in a you know, supine lying down position, they actually can't even do in that position, you know. So, again, I think you need to break down some of the motions and movements and then progress out from there.
All right, so I think that's the big thing, is just like everybody else, I'm thinking, okay, well, how can I mimic that exactly? Well, we got to go back to the basics.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's so easy for me to forget, because obviously I did in the 20 minutes that from the start of your talk till now or whatever it was. You know, just start at the beginning, start at the most basic things. And also you said running in the pool is a really good way, because you said the pool amplifies what they
– it'll magnify your deficiencies. So, you know, so you see your athletes that are very hip flexor dominant. You know, they'll be in that trunk flexion position, you know, as they are running. You know, so use those verbal cues to pull them back up. Use those quads and hip flexors and those muscles as they're intended to in that running motion pattern as they're progressing. Obviously, we can progress them to the shallow end. We'll progress them out of the pool. You know, progress them with, you know, again, we used to go from simple to complicated. We go from water to land. You know, we can progress them through that median to help, you know, increase movement quality.
All right, so what if we don't have a pool? We don't have a pool on campus. So.
Absolutely. It's, you know, challenging. So, obviously, you know, we obviously use the equipment supplies that we have. Mm-hmm. You know, at the University of Michigan, I have access to a pool, but I have only access certain times. So I still have to be able to get my job done every day. So, again, I can maybe go to some land work. You know, we start out in the, you know, the horizontal position and work on those movement patterns in that plane. You know, as it progresses, you know, if I have the ability to get one of my athletes in the pool or in the water, you know, I just try to take advantage of that resource and that, you know, that I have. But other times, you know, I have to maybe use more when I'm on the road at the hotel. You know, hey, we're going to do a lot more pool work this because I have that access and availability to it.
Gotcha. So when you have them running in the pool, do you normally have the, like, the running belts or whatever?
Yeah. So they have, you know, they have lots of flotation devices because, again, you have people, and I say athletes because I think every person is an athlete in that sense, depending on what they do day to day. You know, the mom, the person in the military, law enforcement, the athletes we work with that we think of, you know, everybody kind of has that that ability of being an athlete. But, yeah, you have to, again, work on those kind of qualities and the movements and those resources for the flotation devices. They have ones that go around your waist. They have ones that go around your around your feet. They also have ones that kind of go around you, kind of like a poncho, if you will. Obviously not as big and, you know, draped down, but actually it goes around your chest to help kind of keep you afloat. So there's ways to do it, and obviously, you know, it is something to consider that when you put someone in a pool is, you know, what's their comfortability of being in a pool or body water.
All right, so in your presentation, you also showed a map of your school and one path that was 5 minutes, one path that was 7 minutes. And then you correlated that saying, you know, hey, most people are going to take the 5 minutes because it's easier. And then you showed the muscle patterns on the back of the leg. Can you go over that one more time with me here? And then how do we switch to the correct path?
Correct. So, you know, when we look at muscle movement patterns, you know, someone's going to do a bicep. Well, you know, we look at a bicep, you know, it's a movement pattern of elbow flexion. Not necessarily bicep is elbow flexion. I think that's the first thing to think about. You know, there's other muscles that actually flex the bicep, for example. You know, when we start putting those weights of increase of stress, if you will, we're going to start recruiting other patterns of movement. So we may start using more brachioradialis, more, you know, maybe more pec minor. Okay, you know, so maybe we need to back those weights down to get more quality movement. Again, we're going to test, not guess. So if someone has those tight muscles, try to figure out maybe what's going on, and through, you know, motor control, try to get those muscles that are maybe being facilitated or inhibited back on track to actually a good quality movement pattern.
Okay, so test, not guess. Explain that a little bit more.
Sure. So in a course I took through neurokinetic therapy, you know, we look for the muscle in a movement pattern. You know, muscles move in chains and patterns. You know, so maybe we need to look at up and down the chain to figure out maybe some muscle that's actually being facilitated or inhibited that's causing the muscles down the chain or up the chain to maybe be inhibited or facilitated. And obviously through neurokinetic therapy and through our soft tissues that we do, maybe get those muscles that are inhibited, think of it like a dimmer switch, the ones that are really, really bright and the ones that are really, really dim, they're not quite on or off, right? They're in a shade of dim. So we want to maybe get those ones that are dim, sorry, the ones that are dim become a little bit more lit, and the ones that are really facilitated, really overactive, that pec minor, right, those hip flexors, figure out maybe what's going on in the chain at the abdomen, right, and your core muscles, if you will. You know, maybe it's coming down from the foot.
All right, so then going back to the blue and yellow lines, because I should have the presentation linked to this interview, which will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Brian Boyles. How did you save it? Did you save
White.
SPAT 16. So it saves as Brian Boyles, SPAT 16. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. So that's how it'll be saved, and then I should have the presentation link so you can go through and see what we're talking about. But then how do we engage? Because one of the roadmaps missed the glutes, and one of them went right up through the center of the calf, through the center of the hamstring, and through the glutes. So how do we engage that and train that?
So obviously finding out maybe whether or not they're facilitated or inhibited or something going up and down the chain that is not. And then once they are turned back, you know, if that light switch is kind of rebrought back up from a dim to a little brighter, you know, work on strengthening that pattern. You know, in terms of an exercise, it's hard, obviously, not knowing maybe the specific, maybe what's facilitated, because it may be something that, you know, some diaphragm is being, you know, really overacting for that hip flexor. Maybe hip flexor is really overacting for that rectus femoris. Maybe really working on, obviously, we look at relationship compensation patterns. We look at muscles that are, you know, obviously you have agonist, antagonist and muscles that maybe work against each other with each other. So maybe one's really kind of working for the other one. So maybe that's why your hamstrings are more tightened. You know, maybe your hamstrings are tight relating now more to your glutes, maybe not wanting to fire correctly.
All right, another comment that you made that I liked, and that I feel like in general people are moving away from or whatever, is if you only lift steel, then you'll bend like steel. I feel like, or at least at my school, that the guy that was kind of in charge of the after-school weights program for the kids, he was incorporating more running and cutting and play, you know, playing football or 7-on-7. As part of their training, rather than just, all right, we're going to hit the weight room and that's it. You know, they were doing more of the CrossFit type activities to be a normal human. But explain that just a little bit more. If you bend like steel, or if you lift only the steel, you bend like steel.
You know, so the body's always going to adapt to what it's used to and work with. You know, so I'm a big person of using tubing. You know, TheraBand, TheraTubing, you know, elastic band type material in the to be able to work and lift. You know, we think of bicep curl as a movement, you know, but when do we actually ever bicep curl in a sport? I mean, there's really no sport that actually does that.
Right.
You know, but we actually get the bicep. Let's say someone's a professional dart thrower. They're up here. Well, they're actually having a bicep curl to go back. You know, so maybe we're using TheraBand as the medium of contraction, relax, right? Maybe we actually put them in different planes, contract, relax, versus up here, you know, someone would have a very hard time holding a 25-pound weight. That dart doesn't even weigh but a couple ounces.
Yeah.
So when we look at, you know, our movement patterns, you know, maybe we're using our TheraBand or our tubing, our elastic tubing as our actual, you know, weight and resistance. You know, maybe they're closer to the wall, they're further away from the wall, actually increases that resistance, thus making the exercise more demanding and challenging. You know, if I had you lay on the table here and I had you bring your knee to your chest and extend out so you'd be a nice straight 90-90, right, 90-90 to straight 90, right, you'd find that very challenging if we had the band over here, right, trying to get up and maintain that nice position. And then coming back down, obviously, you begin the hamstring glute component. But if we put the band on the opposite side, as you brought up knee to chest, you'd find that just as demanding on the hip flexors, but also would help flexibility on both sides, depending where your bands were.
All right, so it seems, I don't know, it's a lot. Like, it, from what we're talking about here, it seems like it's a lot of hands-on. Can this be done as a large group, and then how would you efficiently do that?
You know, I think obviously there would be a little bit of an educational component like anything else. You know, that athlete didn't learn how to do a power clean all by himself. There took some sort of educational component and building him up to where they were. You know, I think Using the bands and everything would be a big change from using weights.
Right.
You know, where would you attach a band on a wall? Because obviously your angular pull closer down the ground versus more up high may help with flexibility, may help with strength, may help with endurance at different kind of angles and pulls. You know, I think you could do it just like anything else. obviously, it would take a change in culture in that sense.
Right, and then when you were talking to just me and Bubba, one of the things you were talking about was Ray Lewis was one of the fastest, you know, from going side to side, and I think you said he ran with bands around his feet or his hips, or you just mentioned it in the same conversation. So I was wondering about how would you run with bands around your feet or your around your knees?
So just, you know, one of the things we talked about out there was obviously Ray Lewis had great lateral speed, but it's something that he worked on, you know. But and I refer to not him necessarily using it, but using the bands in that sense of working on increasing your lateral speed. obviously, your very traditional ones you see in some of your sports medicine catalogs, they have the bungees, and you see someone maybe pulling behind, you're pulling the side and working on that, you know, from a joint, you know, extremity, upper or lower extremity. Obviously, you know, TheraBands, you can tie loops around those, so you can go opposite foot to opposite hand, you can go opposite hand, same side hand, and obviously you can go to extremity. You know, so simple as buying, you know, some elastic tubing or band and tying two loops. Obviously, you can put those around your feet, and you can work on some of those movement patterns, obviously slow and, you know, working out building. But at the same time, you know, you could have someone on the side holding your band at your foot, you know, and as you are abducting and adducting, you're actually getting that isolation of those muscles.
All right, so I'm just trying to picture this. Let's go with the tubing with loops around the feet,
okay,
and they can work on the lateral work. All right, so and we're in again remembering the simple to complex.
You know, so maybe they're laying on their back first.
Okay.
You know, maybe they're laying on their back and they're working on some abduction, adduction of their hips.
All right.
Right. And as they're getting better, maybe you have them sit up and they're working abduction, adduction of hips. And then maybe they're sitting on a bench, same mentality where that band's between their legs and they're working on that same movement pattern. Right. And then obviously then standing up. And then you can obviously incorporate that and obviously going forward, backwards, side to side, even different angled out, you know, and obviously simple to complicated. Start by walking. Obviously, you can increase that, you know, to jogging, and then add other components that we talked about.
Right, and then the timeline for moving from simple to complex, because you also mentioned more is not better because a lot of times we sacrifice quality for quantity. So in going along the same thing, bands around the feet, we're going to start laying on the ground, just spreading the feet and bringing them back together, and then, you know, sitting up and then sitting on a bench. So what does the timeline for that look like?
You know, every athlete in person is different. You know, I wear a size 9 shoe, you wear a size 12, she wears a size 6. We're all a little different, and we're all going to
Nicole, do you wear a size 6?
Really do.
I wear a size 12. That's pretty good.
Baller status. you know, but obviously everyone progresses at different, you know, different rates. You know, I may fatigue out at 5. You know, you may fatigue out at 10, you know, but what if we change bands? You know, maybe we start out with a black band and went down to red, and we went to black, red, and went up to black. I mean, we also talk about the component of endurance, you know, by increasing that resistance of the band, you know, maybe how far they pull out, maybe the actual intensity of the band, because every band has its own intensities. You know, we can progress the body, you know, just like any other athlete, they don't just start out on the varsity team. They kind of have to work themselves up, you know, and each athlete's going to progress. You know, as they get stronger and keep working through those different qualities, they're going to progress, you know, but it takes time.
Right, I understand that, but that's what I'm saying. Like, would I need to start, or would my plan need to be, all right, on day one, everybody, and in general, I know you said every athlete's different, but in general, everybody's going to start on the ground, and then day two, or for set one, everybody's going to start, and for set two, everybody's going to be sitting.
We could add that component of variability as well with the different qualities. Maybe today's focus is going to be, you know, we're going to do these exercises in the horizontal position. We're going to do these ones in the sitting position. You know, maybe we're going to do the first two sets. You know, we talk about sets and reps, and we always assume everything's 3 sets of 10. You know, why couldn't first set of 10 be with blacks and the next two be with reds? Or would the first two be with blacks and the last one be with reds? And maybe we do the first two sets laying on the ground. The last one maybe is a sitting up one with a red band. And we can kind of progress some of those through like a periodization model. You know, we look at maybe today's focus is, you know, a slow endurance speed. So we're going to do nice, slow, steady reps, almost like on a metronome, and really work on that slow movement quality of each one. But maybe we got to go to a yellow band on that day versus the black band for more, you know, maybe we're doing shorter, you know, movements, shorter speeds, maybe less distance between those joints.
All right, and then another thing is you said, do we ever train a soccer player for to go 116 minutes? right? So I love watching soccer and, you know, thinking about the overtimes where they have to play those extra things. But even at that, I know that they do runs where they'll run for, you know, 90 minutes, but that's like a constant jog.
Right.
Or they'll do, you know, sprints and that kind of thing. But how do we train them to go up and down and up and down and up and down, start and stop, twisting for 90 minutes?
So one of my favorite things that I really enjoy doing, like when I personally work out, is I do what they call a soccer drill. And I take a predetermined space, you know, so that space may be, you know, this big or maybe like this big. And I have to, for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, continue moving, right? So I may do some forward running, and I may do some lateral side-to-step work, right? I may do some, you know, if you will, ladder drills, you know, in the middle of that constant state of moving. And I may do my run, I may do 30 seconds on, 20 seconds off, but my off isn't really off. You know, if you ever watch a soccer player, they never stop moving.
Right.
It's a state of walking through running. You know, so maybe my 15 seconds on, I'm really going to go as fast as I can, and my goal is to get from A to B. And when I get to B, I'm going to slow down, I'm going to backpedal, and I'm going to open my hips up, right? And I'm going to go to the next spot and just kind of try to find almost that next cone. Or maybe I'm going to do it nice and slow and really accentuate that lateral step, you know, nice and low and slow. Maybe I have bands on that day, you know. So I may do a 20, 30-minute run in a space this big, and really that's not a lot of space. Right, but there's an emphasis maybe on slow and controlled movement versus, you know, more explosive power, getting to that next spot. Maybe I, you know, open my legs, karaoke, sidestep, those things that we do every day. You know, just changing up instead of doing them always in a ladder, because, you know, again, in that ladder, where's that ladder ever on a field? Well, no, it's not. It's in a part of movement plane. You know, so maybe side to side. Maybe I have to do some karaoke and then explode out and go find the next cone out of that. Maybe angled out. Maybe instead of going out angled this way, maybe it's angled back this way. Maybe I'm actually have to open up my hips and run back there, right? Maybe I'm going to have to, instead of maybe go plant, go back forward, and then maybe go off in an opposite direction. So, again, we talk about the importance of balance, right, coordination,
right,
doing those different movement patterns in different planes, right? We talk about training all in the different planes, not just this plane going forward, you know, not just doing the ladder going this way or the ladder going this way. What about the ladder going that side angle? What about if I'm really having to focus maybe on something ahead of me? Maybe I have to read some letters or work on some coordination color patterns as I'm working that. So I'm really focusing those upper level brain functions as I'm going through things. Again, our athletes don't really ever walk out of practice and say, man, my brain's a little tired today at practice. It's, man, I'm really tired, my muscles are sore. You know, so incorporating all those different components of training.
Yeah, so you showed a picture of a guy. It looked like he was doing lateral ladder drills while somebody, you said somebody was holding a Snell's chart or something like that.
So, you know, in that drill, he, you know, the gentleman's taking a sidestep, and they have a Snell chart, if you will, a box with letters, and they're having to read letters. And as they move, they're actually having to go there and look through the backside and look at another one that's further out. So, again, it's requiring them to focus on something else besides where their body's at.
So, again, yeah. Working the brain, working just lots of different
components of training.
And again, the thing, you know, we hear all these ideas, and I feel like we're all like, oh yeah, that's awesome, I'm gonna take that back. But really, the key here is going simple to complex. Start simple. Make sure that they can achieve it at the most basic level, laying down, spreading the legs apart, and then back, and then go to the next step, and next step, and then you might have to do next week just start over again. And so, again, it's easy for us to, all right, that's the newest, greatest, you know, that's what he does at the, you know, J.J. Watt does at the end of his workout. He's a freaking beast, right? And he's a professional athlete. Well, these are high school kids. The picture that you showed of that kid doing the deadlift where his feet are probably a foot outside of his shoulders and just terrible, but they're going to count it as a rep because he lifted the weight to his shoulders. So, again, focus on a simple to complex. Go over those. Each step of the, now I can't remember the name, what's the
over the principle? Qualities, yeah. So we look at balance, you know, balance. Balance is, you know, it's straining the body in all directions. It's not just forward. It's forward and backwards. It's side to side. You know, balance also is just like it is work and rest. It's a one-to-one ratio. You know, with nutrition, hydration, they're all components of being balanced. You know, we got flexibility, right? And we talk about coordination. You know, new and old coordination patterns. You know, I always brush my teeth with my right hand, and I go to with my left hand, it's very challenging. Well, why is that? You know, it's a coordination pattern I'm not used to training in, just like we talked about. And we go, you know, speed, strength, and endurance. You know, different qualities, you know, speed, you know, how do you really know what's 100%, what's 50%, what's 25%? But the game itself, like we talk about with soccer, it's not all 100%. And that soccer athlete goes from walking, standing to jogging, running over 90 minutes, if you mm-hmm. will, right? Training those different components of speed, you know, strength. Obviously, we use our tubing to help with that strength. Obviously, strength allows for, you know, nice fluid movement through the entire range of motion. You know, so versus just being the bicep curl, you know, bicep curl back here coming up. You know, now we get those components of shoulder flexion and again movement patterns, and obviously the endurance aspect to be able to do things over and over repetitively. You know, as that same quality of motion.
All right, Brian Boyles, University of Michigan. What was the name of the theory again, Brodkin?
Sure, it's called the Brodenko method.
Brodenko. Okay, and discussing the Brodenko method, this episode will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/BrianBoylesSpat16, and then again we'll have a link to the presentation there. Lots of good information, and if someone wants to get a hold of you,
my email is bbwatc@umich.edu.
All right, so that's bbwatc@umich.edu. What about Twitter, Facebook,
Instagram? Don't do any of those.
None of them?
No.
All right. Well, man, you could be tweeting out some really good exercises, Instagramming, or I don't know about Snapchatting. But all right, so if you got questions, can people email you?
Sure, absolutely. Yep.
And then you got any like videos on YouTube or?
Nope. I guess I'm old school in that sense, you know.
That works. So if you got questions, let them know. Again, this is Sports Medicine Broadcast. Jeremy Jackson, Nicole Kesha, size 6 shoe. Great guess. That is a wrap. Thank you, sir.
That was a great guess, by the way.